Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. This week, two topics associated with potentially going back to school.
57% of kids do get sick within the first 3 weeks of term, which really highlights that it is a problem and children are getting sick and it is affecting the whole families as well.
Emily Foster is a nutritionist with Holland & Barrett and gives us some tips on avoiding the illnesses that can circulate at the start of the school year. Then I talked to consultant dermatologist Dr. Rima Clayton about treatments for acne in teenagers and look at why it could be more of a deal for teenagers now than it was for me.
It's more about what normal is, and rather than normal just being what we used to perceive as normal, normal now is perfection, perceived perfection. And that's why it is a problem. And teenagers are putting more and more pressure on themselves to strive to what they're seeing on these devices.
Potentially another thing social media has to answer for. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Before I spoke to Emily Foster about the illnesses that can be associated with returning to school, I first of all asked her, what is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian? And as a nutritionist, what her qualifications are?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main difference between nutritionist and dietitian is you actually have to do different degrees to be able to have the title. So dietitians, you have to do a dietetics degree and you tend to work in a clinical setting. So often in hospitals, working with sick individuals or more complex medical conditions. Whereas a nutritionist will do a nutritionist qualification, a nutrition degree, and they will tend to work with more so the general population, the healthy population, but more so just promoting healthy living, healthy nutrition and lifestyle rather than specific health conditions. One thing around the nutrition degree, though, and title as a nutritionist, which is different to a dietetic title, is a nutritionist isn't a regulated title, which basically means anybody can call themselves a nutritionist.
I could call myself a nutritionist this afternoon and charge people for my advice. I mean, they'd be crazy to take it, but I could do that.
Yep, technically you could. So with in the nutritionist title, there is the AFN, which is the Association for Nutrition, which is a voluntary accreditation that nutritionists can have. And to be able to get that accreditation, you do have to have certain degrees, certain qualifications already. So for myself, for example, I am accredited with the Association for Nutrition. So that's how you can really tell if someone is properly qualified nutritionist.
Yeah, that's your professional body. Are there other organisations that say they're the professional body for nutritionists?
Oh, to be honest, I don't know.
Okay,
For
not to worry.
the UK, it is the AFN, which is the main
And
one, but potentially in other countries.
but the important thing is people can go onto that website and check someone's name and say, oh, right, they are a member. I can, you know,
Yeah, so normally people have, or the nutritionist will, at the end of their name, they'll put a NUTR, which means associate nutritionist, or RNUTR, which means registered nutritionist. So this is what really indicates that they are accredited.
Sure. Okay, that's very good news. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, so as I said, the return to school is approaching, and with that generally comes a rash of colds and coughs and, well, maybe rashes as well, all kinds of illnesses that
Yeah.
kids pick up at school, and then they can get passed on to the rest of the household, and the result can be, you know, chaos because, you know, the grown-ups, the children are ill, so the grown-ups have to do childcare and that miss work, and sometimes the grown-ups get ill as well. So this can be a problem, but how much of a problem is this really? Does it gum up the wheels of industry?
Well, interestingly, with some of our research, we found that two-thirds of working parents say that they miss work at least once per term as a result of their child's illness. And 57% of kids do get sick within the first 3 weeks of term, which really highlights that it is a problem and children are getting sick and it is affecting the whole families as well. So I think, yes, it is a definitely a really big and important topic to talk about. And absolutely, we can sort of look at that back to school moment as a reset moment. So back to school is a great time for a wellness reset for the whole family, not just for the kids. So
Well,
it's a
certainly
great chance.
my personal experience, my kids are a bit older now, but when they were smaller, going back to school, I mean, I've still got one at school, but he's 15. They seem to be slightly less of a problem when they get a bit older. But when they were younger, going back to school, frequently they would come home with coughs and colds and all the rest of it. So yeah, I think we can definitely agree that's a problem. It, my personal experience at N of one, relatively small, but yes. It's an issue. So, what is best for children's health to try and prevent them coming home with, you know, the classic cough, cold, sniffles, etc.?
Yeah, of course. So I always encourage with that time coming back to school is it's really important to be prepared. So it's like packing your school bag, but for health. So it's looking at the basics like sleep, nutrition, hydration, and movement. Those are going to be the sort of foundations of health and foundations, sort of pillars of health for getting back to school and sort of fighting off those colds and flus. So if we take sleep, for example, so we know that lack of sleep can suppress the immune system. So it's really important that we are getting back into a regular sleep routine before going back to school. So an easy way to do this would be bringing your bedtime forward by 10 to 15 minutes each day until you get to that desired time ready for school to start. And then of course some of the other important ones we spoke about, nutrition, so a well-rounded diet, variety of colorful foods, so plenty of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, healthy fats are going to be really important. And I always say that it's a really good way to look at it is to eat the rainbow. So a colorful plate tends to be a sign of a healthy plate. Different colours of fruits and vegetables mean there's a wide variety of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants to support the immune system too.
All good advice. Generally speaking, do you think us parents are any good at that? I'm remembering back to trying to get the kids back into going to bed early. That's always an interesting discussion, stroke fight to have. And of course, you know, you always try and feed your children properly. But generally speaking, are the UK's parents, are we any good at this?
I think it's definitely easier said than done. And there's definitely challenges in play that are going to restrict us from being able to do this. And I do think that it is all about balance. You're not going to get it right every time or every night. But it's about sort of trying to get it right most of the time. So if you're struggling with things like fruits and vegetables and foods, thinking of creative ways to get these into food. So you could sneak roasted pe red peppers and courgettes into pasta sauces, for example, or make fun fruit kebabs with the children to try and encourage them to eat more fruit. So I think definitely it's all good means saying do all these things. But yes, I completely understand there are challenges there and it can be very difficult.
What else can we do? I'm thinking of sort of simple sort of personal hygiene kind of stuff that parents can teach their kids.
Yeah, I think one of the big ones is going to be washing your hands. So making sure that we are washing our hands for at least 20 seconds and doing that after going to the toilet, before meals, when we get home from school as well. This is going to be a really big one to prevent colds and flus, and then that's spreading to the rest of the family as well.
Yeah, that sounds like certainly good advice. In your press release, I'm just looking at this, it says a surprising number of parents aren't teaching their children basic immunity habits, with a third admitting they haven't taught their children to wash their hands. That's a bit alarming.
Yes.
Where's that statistic from?
Yeah, so it's all research Holland and Barrett have done. So it's not myself personally that did this research, but it's one of our team. So absolutely, it is an alarming figure that I also noticed, as well, as you would expect that parents with the knowledge and adults with the knowledge would be passing that on to kids if they sort of knew the importance.
Yeah, actually, I can just chuck in an anecdotal story here. I'll try and keep it quick, but it's a story that does terrify me. My wife is a scientist, and she works at a teaching university where they teach medics, and she was drafted in to do examining of medics. And one of the things, the simple things, was an examination was how to wash your hands. This was for medics, all right? This is not kids going back to school.
Yeah.
And a surprising number of students failed the washing your hands properly as hoping to be a medic. So yes.
Wow.
it would appear quite a few of us aren't very good at that. All right, let's park that scary story. What else have we got? Telling our children to eat well and drink water. Well, we kind of covered that a little bit. What about the drinking water? Do kids really need to drink much water to keep healthy?
Yeah, so hydration plays a huge role in all sort of bodily functions. So it is going to be a really important one to make sure that they are hydrated. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just water, but you can add squash in it, for example, to make it a little bit more flavourable or to encourage children to drink. But it is going to be definitely an important one for immune function, but all of our bodily functions too.
Good. And it goes on to say, furthermore, less than half of parents haven't regularly given their family multivitamins, missing immunity off the back to school checklist. Well, I would kind of have hoped that figure would be tiny, like 0.5% or something, because, you know, if we're feeding our children properly, you know, do they need this sort of stuff?
So there's the potential for children to need multivitamins, and it can help to fill in the gaps, especially with picky eaters that you do often get with children, so it can definitely have a time and a place. I think also sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult to know which multivitamin to get or what is necessary for your child. So we've got at Holland and Barrett trained experts. We do really encourage you to come into store, chat to a trained expert to help really receive that tailored advice and recommendations for supporting your family's personal well-being journey. Or alternatively, we've also curated some immunity bundles. So these are great starter packs with the must-have nutrition and immunity products, which essentially we're trying to make it easier for families to incorporate immunity into their routine with the recommended products all in one place, which it might have been a little bit harder to find previously.
Okay, all right, but certainly the main, if you like, the thrust of what's better for your children is food, not pills, presumably.
So absolutely. So it is always a food first approach. So when we look at food compared to supplements, foods are going to have a lot of additional fiber, vitamins and minerals, antioxidants in them. There's also absolutely a benefit of the sitting down and eating and the social occasion of food as well. But if obviously we do have picky eaters, or it's difficult to get children to eat certain fruits and vegetables or enough of them, then multivitamins are great as a substitute to help to really fill in the gaps where needed. And it might be something that you use for a few months or so, and then once you get your child sort of their diet back on track, then it might be something that you stop.
Isn't there a slight concern here that if you sort of prey on parents' fears of, oh, little Johnny didn't eat enough apple the other day, I better fill him full of pills, is that not a bit of an alarm that, you know, parents will go, oh, well, I might as well give him this anyway, just in case?
So we're not trying to substitute a healthy lifestyle. We are still absolutely encouraging a healthy lifestyle, a healthy diet. That is going to be the core principle. But it is to help sort of fill in the gaps as an insurance policy. If necessary for the child, so it might not be necessary for everyone, then it's a really great option.
Okay. All right. So, if we are talking about vitamins, multivitamins in particular, mm-hmm. Because I'm old and boring, I actually get the Witch magazine, and this month there was an article all about multivitamins in it. So, and actually, I'm just looking at the table now. Holland and Barrett did quite well in the Witch listing of multivitamins. Now, this is multivitamins, regular multivitamins, and you mentioned child multivitamins. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between those two things?
So there will be a difference. So the recommended daily intakes of nutrients for children is going to be a lot less than for adults. So it is basically just a change in dosaging to make sure it is appropriate for a child of a certain age compared to a full grown adult.
Okay. And can there be a problem with having too much of one vitamin? So if parents are actually, you know, doing quite a good job of making mm-hmm. sure Johnny eats his apples and his fruit and veg and all the rest of it, but then thinking, oh, it's an insurance policy, I'll give him some pills, and he gets too much of certain vitamins and minerals, can that potentially be a bad thing?
There is potentially that risk. So too much of anything can be a bad thing. However, I would say that with multivitamins, you do find that the dosages of all of the vitamins and minerals tend to be quite low because they've got to fit so many different vitamins and minerals in one gummy or one tablet that the dosages tends to be low enough for it not to be an issue and it just to be a slight top up from their normal diet.
I see. Okay. Let me just go on to this, ask you some questions about this particular article, because they do mention some things that are important to think about, or what they think about anyway, when they're looking at multivitamins.
Okay.
One thing they mention, which I must admit I hadn't really kind of thought about much before, is this term bioavailability. Now, two things, I suppose. What does that mean, and how can you ensure that you kind of provide bioavailability and that you don't just end up with kind of expensive wee?
Yeah, sure. So bioavailability basically means how well a vitamin, mineral or herbal extract is absorbed into the body. So the more bioavailable it is, the more the body absorbs it and the more of the vitamin that we can actually use and less of it is just excreted out through the body. So when it comes to vitamins and minerals, there's certain compounds, for example, that they can be bound to make them more bioavailable. So if you take magnesium, for example, you get magnesium oxide, which is less bioavailable than magnesium biglycinate. So it basically means it's less absorbable by the body. There's also certain ways that we can eat or certain things that we can consume to make certain vitamins and minerals more bioavailable or less. So for example, if we take iron combined with vitamin C can help the absorption. So if we have a multivitamin with iron and vitamin C, even better, we're going to absorb more of that iron. Or if you take an iron supplement on its own, but you have it alongside a glass of orange juice, which is rich in vitamin C, again, that's going to increase the bioavailability. Things that could potentially decrease the bioavailability is things like tannins, which are found in coffee and tea. So often if you have coffee and tea alongside iron, for example, it can actually reduce the bioavailability and the absorption of the iron. So it's really about what form the vitamins and minerals are in and what we're eating and consuming alongside our supplements.
So generally, should you have the supplements if you have them on an empty stomach? Or actually, from what you just said, maybe not.
It depends on the supplement, actually. So some of them can be taken on an empty stomach, but some are better absorbed with food. So you'll find most supplements generally are better absorbed alongside food, especially ones which are fat soluble. So you've got certain vitamins, vitamin D, A, E and K, which are fat soluble, which means they basically need fat to be able to be absorbed. So if you have a little bit of fat within a meal alongside those vitamins and minerals, then it helps them absorb better. However, you'll find, for example, some vitamin D's have what's called MCT oil within them. So they put a fat within it so that you don't have to take it with a meal. You've got that fat to help the absorbability already in the product.
All right. And what's in the product? That comes up sort of the key nutrients. Who decides that if you're selling a multivitamin, what should actually be in it? Because multi could mean lots of things, I suppose. So how do you decide what vitamins and what minerals should go in these things, both for adults and for kids?
Yeah, it does really range. So you get multivitamins which have sort of 23 different vitamins and minerals in them, but you can have some with a lot less than that, sort of 8 to 10. So it depends if you want really a broad spectrum one, so you're getting a little bit of everything. But I would say that the most common ones that we do see in multivitamins would be vitamin D, because that's really difficult to get within the diet. Vitamin C as well, to support the immune system. B vitamins is one that we tend not to get very much within the diet as well, so they seem to be our main ones. And then you will also get multivitamins that are slightly targeted to different areas. So for example, targeted to the immunity. So they'll have more of those immune boosting vitamins and minerals in them, or targeted to energy levels. So they'll have, again, more of those energy supporting vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Well, certainly looking at the which list here, Holland and Barrett score 5 stars when it comes to dose. So presumably, as far as they're concerned, they think you've got it right. There's another thing they suggest here. They talk about additives, and by that I think they mean to make a pill, you know, you have to have bulking agents or filling, yeah, and that sort of thing. Otherwise there's just sort of nothing to swallow or nothing to put the vitamins in, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, tell us about that, and as far as Holland and Barrett's approach to that.
So yes, absolutely, you do need bulking agents, certain fillers, so that it forms a pill and you can swallow it. Obviously, having ingredients within products that people don't know or haven't heard of before can sometimes raise a concern. But I think with Holland & Barrett products, it's important to note that everything is regulated. Everything follows sort of the regulations by law. So we know that the amounts and what we've got in all of our products is absolutely safe to consume.
Very good. All right. Now, this is going to be an issue as kids go back to school. So if parents want to find out a bit more about trying to up their kids' immunity, although really feeding them properly and making sure they get enough sleep is the A1 way to do it, where can they go for a bit more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So popping into any Holland & Barrett store is always a great thing to do. All of our store colleagues are trained, so they'll be able to give you personalised and unique advice tailored to your situation. We've also
Are they all trained to your standards? Are they all nutritionists?
They're not all nutritionists, so they do a Holland & Barrett qualification, which is the same as an A level. So that's the standard that they do. So they're all known as qualified to advise. And then we've also got a team of trained advisors online as well. So if you go onto our Holland & Barrett website, you can start a live call, or you can book a 15-minute consultation with one of our advisors. Again, getting similar advice, but it's just if you didn't want to or didn't have the time to go into store. And then if you go onto our website as well, we've got something called the Health Hub, which has plenty of articles on all sort of nutrition topics that you can go and have a read as well.
Good. All right, Emily, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
That's no problem at all. It's lovely speaking with you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good.
Before I introduce the next guest, I'd just like to remind you about the Back App chair. It's a chair that can be really worth trying if you suffer from back pain or you're worried about your posture. Do have a look at my website, relaxbackuk.com. There are some videos there that show how the chair works, and you can also sign up for a free trial to see if the chair might work for you. Now, on to the second guest of the show. This is Dr. Rima Clayton, and we spoke about acne. Acne, particularly in teenagers. But before I started asking her about that, I told her for some of the preparation, about some of the preparation that I did for the chat. Before we started, I put into chat GPT, give me 15 names for acne. And there were, I came out with zit, pimple, blemish, pustule, and there are thousands. I'm sure you've heard many more than me in your line of work. And I thought, okay, so why are there so many words for spot, essentially? And I came to the conclusion that it's got to be that actually clear skin is the exception for teenagers, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We know that up to 95% of teenagers will have some level of spots or acne at some point in their teenage years. So it is incredibly common. I think terminology has probably evolved over time, and that's why ChatGPT will bring up all the ones that have been used historically as well. I think commonly acne is largely known as whiteheads, blackheads, and then the deeper nodules and cysts as the four key terms. But anything, any of those terms you've used, they all mean the same thing.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But I guess my point is, it's normal for teens to have some blemishes. You know, the exception is to have clear skin. So if most people don't have clear skin, most teens don't have clear skin, how come it's such an issue? What's the problem? I've been a bit simplistic here, but you know, what's the issue? We all got spots.
You're absolutely right. And sometimes that's how people dismiss acne is, well, everyone gets it. I had it when I was a child, put up with it. It will go away when you move out of your teenage years. And I think what's happened as time's evolved is we're all striving for that perfection, for that clear skin. And so everyone who doesn't have clear skin feels like they're a failure. Something is wrong with them. They're to blame that they're doing something that means that they're not perfect. And therefore, actually, we do need to treat acne. If we don't, we know that not in everybody, but in a lot of patients, it will get worse. It will cause more inflammation. The spots will get bigger, deeper, more painful, uncomfortable. And then they will leave, when they do burn out, they'll leave scarring of varying degrees and pigmentation, which just stretches out how long you're affected by what your skin looks like.
Yeah. So I mean, this is a bit more serious. This isn't the odd spot we're talking about here. How common is it kind of a bit more serious where, you know, it might cause a bit of scarring or a bit of colour issues or, you know?
So, you know, I've got to disagree there a little bit, because actually when we say it's just a couple of spots, actually to somebody that can still be really problematic, and how each individual perceives their acne is very, very different. So what to you or to me may be one or two spots, to somebody will be almost worse than somebody who has got scarring, bright red, big nodules on their skin. So everybody deserves to be treated, and there are different treatments for each level of acne. So no one size fits all.
Yeah, okay. We'll come on to the treatments and things, but just from what you've said, I'm thinking, all right, the problem is the spots, but things have changed, and what's changed, what causes this issue now? Because okay, when I was a teen, it was an issue, but people didn't, as far as I remember, go overboard in this and get too worried about it in a way that they might do today. So what's changed? I've got a suspicion I might know what you're going to say.
I don't think we're still very good at it, because there is still that attitude that, well, it's just spots and you can put up with it. But there is more social media. There is more awareness of what's going on
with
us.
There wasn't any social. I'm 59. There was
none. There was no social media when I was at school. There was no social media when I was at medical school. And in some ways, I'm quite thankful of that. But there is more. The problem with that is actually it's more about what normal is. And rather than normal just being what we used to perceive as normal, normal now is perfection. Perceived perfection. And that's why it is a problem. And teenagers are putting more and more pressure on themselves to strive to what they're seeing on these devices.
Right. Okay. Here's the unfair, impossible question. What are we going to do about it then? Because probably the genie of social media is out of the bottle. We can't stuff that back in, or we might be able to, but that's a long job, a big job. What can we do now? As well, you're a dermatologist. What?
So how can you help? The first thing we need to do is educate people and put it out there that acne is treatable. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be even coming to see a consultant dermatologist. There are things that you can do yourself to look after your skin and do it simply in a straightforward manner before it gets worse. So the first thing is to get it out there that acne is treatable and it's not caused by something you're doing. It's not because you're not washing properly or it's because of what you're eating. So I think education has to be number one. We've got to put the right information out there.
Okay. I have a 15-year-old son and he used to, and still does to some extent, look at doctor this, doctor that, who might not even have been doctors, on social media, talking about acne and cures for spots. And for a time, actually, the result was it got much worse. I suspect because all kinds of weird and wonderful cures were being suggested that weren't appropriate. Getting rid of those people could be a good start.
Yeah, good luck with that. I mean, you're right. There is so much misinformation out there that it's my book. And I've got a 15-year-old son. I've also got older teenage daughters. And when they've struggled with their skin, they come to me and they will argue that what I'm telling them isn't right. But Joe Bloggs on TikTok clearly knows more than I do. And then we have a conversation.
That sounds like an interesting tea time discussion in your household.
Absolutely. And it is interesting because they're so influenced by these social media stars that they believe what they're told. And you've got to really be able to break it down.
As opposed to their mum, who is a dermatologist.
Absolutely. So what I always say is check your sources. Who are you listening to? If they're another dermatology consultant or if they're from the States, if they're a board certified dermatologist, fine. They're going to come at it with the right knowledge. But if you're just listening to somebody who's just made their name on social media, think twice. Because one of the things that has been a real problem, and there's been more and more in mainstream media, has been this using multiple products. You've got, you know, girls as young as 9 using retinols and lots of different acids on their skin, stripping it, causing more inflammation and causing more problems. So it's a problem, but I'm hoping more and more medically trained doctors are coming onto social media and hopefully balancing and addressing some of these inaccuracies out there.
Right. Okay. We'll part that. Because that's an ongoing issue. We might have to chat in a few months' time to see where that's going. But, you know, if someone does have a problem, they've got a few spots and they'd rather not because, you know, who let's face it, who wants spots? What is the kind of the first advice from a dermatologist?
So if we're looking at something that's, as you say, mild, just a few spots that are coming and going and they're annoying you, I think the most sensible first point of action would be to go to a chemist. Talk to the pharmacist about what's simple to use on your skin. You know, when you look on the shelves, it's mind-blowing. There are so many products, so many claims, it's so confusing. And the key is to start simple. You're not trying to put 20 million serums and products on your skin. You only want to keep it to a simple, gentle cleanser, maybe one active, and I'll come back to that, and then a moisturiser that's made for acne-prone skin. So when we talk about an active in between the wash and the moisturiser, that will be something that can target the acne. The commonest one that was around when we were children and is still does what it says on the tin would be something like benzoyl peroxide. It's a good starting block for how to treat your acne, and it's available over the counter. If you've done that for a few weeks, the spots are still going, or you've had any problems, at that point, it's sensible to go and see your GP. Get on the right track than buying more products, spending more money on some of these very expensive products out there for more problems.
Okay, and GPs will take you seriously and help you sort things out, will they?
Yeah, absolutely. They know it's a medical concern. You know, it's a medical condition, and it not only has the physical implications, the psychological implications of acne cannot be underestimated.
Right. Well, I mean, that's particularly relevant with, you know, it's back to school this week. Yeah. And, you know, it's an issue. If perhaps teens don't want to go back to school if they feel that they've got, you know, they're not looking their best.
Absolutely. I mean, I see teenagers on an almost daily basis in my clinics, and they will be. Some of them don't even want to come out of their bedroom. It's that much of an issue. And actually, if you can help them, it's an absolute life changer for them.
Yeah. So you mentioned going to your GP. Yeah. Will the NHS help in kind of all cases, or will it be more extreme cases?
I think at the first point of contact, your GP can help you with the mild cases. If it's getting to a point where it is severe, there is a problem with scarring, inflammation, or we need to get the acne under control quicker, then they're more likely to refer you in to see a consultant dermatologist.
Okay, and that will actually happen on the NHS.
It should happen on the NHS, yeah. Absolutely.
Very good. Very often the NHS website is a good starting point for these things. Is that the same with acne?
Yeah, it's not bad as a starting point. I would say that the British Association of Dermatologists website would be better. It's more targeted at acne. There's also a great page on there talking about all the myths that are out there and giving some facts about what's right, what's wrong, as well as the treatments that are available. So I'd go for the British Association of Dermatologists website first, okay. But the NHS is there as well.
Okay, so two good sources there online. And I think maybe to finish, we should just talk about the draw, the allure of other people that may give advice, which is misinformation online. You cited the example in your own household of, you know, your son getting advice from people as opposed to his mum, who's a dermatologist. Please don't do that, I suppose, is the thing to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't listen. There are lots of people out there who know what they're talking about. Go for them.
And yes, yeah, so if they say that they are a dermatologist, or they're what phrase are we looking for to show that they're accredited?
So a consultant dermatologist means that they have been through med school and then they have spent years just trained in skin. It's a little bit complicated in the UK because you can call yourself a dermatologist and not actually be a consultant dermatologist. So be mindful.
Okay. That sounds like good advice to finish on. So many thanks for taking the time to chat, Dr. Clayton. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much to the guests on this week's show, and they were Emily Foster, nutritionist with Holland & Barrett, and Dr. Rima Clayton, consultant dermatologist. And of course, thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. Florida has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.